Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 301 featuring Mike Campo, who is a fantastic digital artist and does incredible work. I loved this podcast. It was so interesting. You may not actually know who Mike Campo is, but you've definitely probably seen his work everywhere. He does a lot of advertising, still work that's in, advertises and magazines and on the web, all over the place. Really, really incredible stuff. He's a big user of Modo as well and V-Ray for Modo. So that was also interesting to hear a little bit about that. But I just thought it was really cool. Kristen, what did you think of Mike?
Yeah, I loved it. I call it McDonald's for the win. When he was like 3 years old, he won the drawing contest there. And then it was kind of skyrocketed from that. And he's just, like you said before, produced imagery for like Under Armour, Chevy, and amazing character portraits of some big celebs. So, and another thing that I thought he did a good point on was he's very much into being like your own artist, and following tutorials helps, but do your own thing and just be you and have your own style.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. And then on top of that, having your own style, the other thing that I really liked that he talked about is the importance of doing passion projects or personal projects, and how to really take advantage of that, how to make it mean something rather than just giving an expression out. You actually put meaning behind it, and it motivates your customers or your clients to come back to you for wanting to do something of that nature. And it really sort of is... just listen to the podcast. It's really good. It's a really the right way to think about it. So I was really happy to have him on. Okay, we've got some announcements, Kristen. What are they? Real quick.
All right. So we have four events coming up, and you can find these out at chaosgroup.com/events. First one is the Illumination Challenge. You have until November 30th to sign up for that. And then November 17th through 18th, we have a V-Ray Fiverr SketchUp Masterclass. And then November 19th through 20th, it's Elm Tech V-Ray Fiverr SketchUp Masterclass. So we'll have Elm Tech, Arcalyme, and Chaos Group members come speak there. And then November 24th, it's the webinar, and that's V-Ray 5 for 3DS Max in Russian. So a lot of good things.
Perfect. That's great. So yeah, lots of good things. And again, these are all online events, so you guys can check them out and do them from home. And they're all available at chaosgroup.com/events. We also have several product announcements that are very big. Obviously, we announced last week that V-Ray 5 for SketchUp is out, which is great. Lots and lots and lots of great new features for our SketchUp people there, new frame buffer, including also V-Ray Vision. I think that's the first time that you guys are going to be seeing V-Ray Vision. And I'd really be curious to see what your feedback is on V-Ray Vision, because I think it is very, very interesting in terms of our real-time ideas and what that means. We also have a V-Ray benchmark. We've updated V-Ray benchmark now, V-Ray 5 benchmark, or benchmark V-Ray 5. I forgot the name of it exactly. But it's out, and I've been using it for quite a bit to test it out, make sure it's all working. We now do three tests. We do a CPU test, a CUDA test, and an RTX test. We have better filtering, better searches. It's actually quite cool. So definitely check it out. I've been lucky enough to test it on some pretty kick-ass hardware, so it's kind of fun to play around with it. So let us know what you think, and go ahead and put your scores up. See how much you bench, as Lon likes to say. All right, cool. Now, in terms of the podcast, Kristen, where can people find out more about the podcast?
You can go to facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast or chaosgroup.com/CG Garage.
Perfect. And also, we should note that the podcast is also in video form, so you can check us out in video. Sometimes the videos don't work all the time, so you may just have, it's just mostly audio. But if you want to check out the video, go check it out. We're on YouTube. We're on our Facebook page as well. But on YouTube, it's just Chaos Group TV. We just put them all up there as well. We're trying this new thing now with Riverside, and I'm actually pretty happy with it. So I think our video technical issues are going to go away finally, but we still have quite a few podcasts that are in the backlog that we're going to get through before we do that. Anyway, that being said, please enjoy this awesome podcast with Mr. Mike Campo.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has fun.
All right. We did it. Yes. Let's hope all this Band-Aid works together. No, it's good.
Yeah. Well, I got the bubble gum holding my AirPods in, so we're good.
I've done worse.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure. Well, thank you so much, Mike, for doing this. This has been really cool. I know that you've known, or David Tracy recommended we have you on, which is a really great idea because I know your work has been really amazing. And it's a kind of area that I think people would love to know a little bit more about how people got into it and how that happened. So in order to figure out that origin story, what got you interested in art? I mean, what got you interested in photography? I'm sure you have a big photography background as well, right?
Right. Yeah. So actually it didn't start as photography. It started as, you know, as a kid, illustration. I was a 3-year-old, won a McDonald's drawing contest, and that's when the whole career
you
started.
Really? A McDonald's drawing contest. Explain that. How did that start?
It was just, you know, back in the day, they used to have those parties at McDonald's, you know, and they'd give you a sheet of paper and you could draw a character, and I drew Grimace. Uh-huh. And they put them up in the wall, and then people voted on them as they went through, and I got a call, and they're like, hey, you won the whatever McDonald's prize. You know, you got a Happy Meal and a tour of the back room. It was amazing. Yeah. As a 3-year-old, I still remember it. The tour was very short, but you know, as a 3-year-old, it was pretty amazing. So,
okay.
That's my origin story, I guess. It's a
bizarre
one. That's
awesome.
But so, you know, I went to school. I always knew I was going to get into art, you know, through high school, going into college, and actually started, scientific illustration. Got kind of bored. There's no creativity in it. Obviously, you can't, you know, drawing surgical procedures, you can't put extra hearts or things in there that you want to creatively. Right. So I got kind of bored and I'm like, I just can't do this the rest of my life.
Sure.
Switched over to do graphic design program. Kind of liked it, you know, but didn't love it. And I just kept finding myself going to the computer lab like all the time, doing Photoshop when it first came. Well, actually, it was called Barney Scan, the very first, you know, see of Photoshop was Barney Scan and then Photoshop 1.
Okay.
So I started with that, and that's kind of what got me into just computer, you know, imaging and graphics. And then out of college, got a job in a retouching studio for automotive, which was attached to a photo studio. So it was like a 60,000 square foot with a huge eggshell psych wall photography.
In Michigan, I'm assuming.
Michigan, yep, in the Detroit area. So, you know, we would shoot vehicles in studio, output to film, scan film in, do all digital retouching, output back to film.
Right.
So that's kind of where I got the professional experience and sort of saw the ins and out of the advertising agency through the automotive. But I was in more of a design studio, so that, you know, I was doing all kinds of stuff like logos and corporate identity and, you know, just a bunch of stuff. And then over the years, I picked up the photography aspect of it and really loved that. And then while I was in school, I used to do some CGI, just dabbled in it a little bit, didn't know much about it. Mm-hmm. That was back in the day of like Forum Z and Strata Studio. I don't know if you remember those old programs.
On a Mac, right?
Yeah. So we, you know, that was kind of my first taste, early mid 90s, you know, and then I fast forward and then I started getting into the retouching and we were trying to find solutions to do it in the computer. And then we started doing computer graphics with some Alias and Autodesk and some other software. And then, you know, probably about 10 years ago, I said, you know, this is what I love to do, is just the CGI photography combination. Like, I'm just going to like bite the bullet, go out on my own and just do that. Cause every time I was doing something else, I was hating it and wanted to do, you know, CGI and photography and still imagery. So that's kind of where, you know, the journey took me and then, you know, to where I'm at today. So I've been on my own now for going on 8 years officially. You know, I used to freelance way before that, but you know, on my own for almost 8 years now.
Right. Yeah. But that's interesting. You came from like one of the first things you were doing was car stuff. Like car photography is hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very hard, especially, yeah. you know, because it's all about, I mean, I used to actually did CG cars for a long time.
Yeah.
I learned the hard way about how to get that reflection perfect on the hood of the car right. and getting all of the door handles right. And the spokes.
There's a lot of tricks. Yeah. There's a lot of tricks for automotive photography. And when you're in the studio, it's, you know, you pick up a lot, and then trying to translate that to CGI, it's a little different, but mm-hmm. you know, having that background and knowing it, of course right. I did 15 years of cars. So I'm like car burned out. Like I don't
oh, I'm sure.
touch another car in my life, but unless yeah. it's the right project, but yeah,
I didn't do 15 years of cars. I did some cars, but not 15 years, but I can definitely sense that you get burned out. But what it does teach you, I think, is it teaches you a lot of discipline about certain things, right?
Right.
So I think that time was probably well spent to learning that discipline, right?
Yeah. And especially, you know, back when we were doing 8-10 film outputs, you'd work on an image and you'd output to 10, and then your art directors would look at it with a 4X loop on an 8-10 film. Like, I mean, we're talking 2000 DPI resolution, like at what they're looking at. So,
right.
you know, they're looking at threads and seams. And so, yeah, it taught me sort of just that, you know, the perfection and like you said, it was like the dedication to try to get that stuff, the details
right.
down. It was brutal, but it did teach me that.
So, yeah. Well, so, during that time, I mean, obviously I've seen your work, and it's really cool work, but you definitely have a style. You can see all those images have a style and have a look to them that are very kind of like, you know, it seems unique to you in a lot of ways. And so that took some time, I'm sure, to sort of develop and hone that style on your own. So what was it that it sort of inspired that? What are some of the things that sort of got you there?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny because I didn't set out to set a style or develop one through my work. I think it just organically developed. You know, I just kind of, when I was starting out in my retouching years and then I was going more into art, digital art, I would always start to critique work and say, okay, well, why do I like something? What is that I'm drawn to? And then why don't I like something? I mean, just as important, you know, like, oh, I don't like that. Well, why don't I like that? What, you know, what about it that I wouldn't do or how I would do it differently?
Right.
So I think just years of doing that and sort of, you know, it's the practice, I got to the point where I just do the work how I see it and not worry about trying to emulate somebody else or do a certain style. I just kind of, you know, create the image how I envision it. And then I think that's why all my work is uniquely me, because I'm not trying to pull other people's techniques or styles into my work. I might use it as inspiration, but I would say, go back again. Well, how would I do it? Or how would I do it differently?
Right.
So I think, you know, it's funny you say that, because there's that hashtag same artist that's going around on Twitter. And it just shows, like, you put up 4 or 5 images, and they're supposed to look different. Like, oh, this is all from the same artist. Well, I put mine up and I'm like, yeah, I have a bunch of different projects, but I still think everyone could say, yeah, Mike worked on all of those, even though they were uniquely different projects.
Yes.
So I think it's just, you know, it's interesting. I didn't set out to get that style. I think it's just, like I said, it was just organically happened. And now it's more of just who I am as an artist and where I'm at in my career, where I just sort of put my vision on things and not worry about creating that style or that look.
Yeah, I agree. I think obviously, you know, I see what you're doing. You have very, you know, strong background colors. Like, your background colors are make everything pop in terms of the content that you're doing. So that seems to be, you know, something that's very, very strong in your expression, as well as the action and the narrative and the framing and the sharpness. Your stuff is very sharp. which is kind of cool too, you know.
Yeah,
we're not looking at soft focused or anything of that nature.
Yeah,
everything is
I turn
crispy.
Off the Boku. Yeah, that depth of field is not. Yeah, I try. You know, that's on purpose too. You know, like
right.
To help tell the stories that I tell. And I think a lot of it, it's funny you said that, you know, there's a lot of like movement and story and details. And I think that's, for me, coming from a still background, I just could never get into the motion and the it just wasn't my, like, I couldn't work on frame by frame of something for that long of a period. My attention span just won't let me do that. But I try to capture that feeling, like, how can I tell that story or that motion in a single frame and using details to do that? So I think that's what, you know, I always, you know, I'm just like everyone else. I'm on social media and watch all the video effects guys and all the motion stuff. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. But, you know, it's not me. It's not sort of what I'm about. But I also try to get that same essence in a still image, you know, compared to something moving.
Yeah, but let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, if people are out there, like you said, people are out there, they're on social media, they're looking at it, at things that other people have done, and then all they learn to do is to do things the way that person has done things, right? They don't necessarily find a time to learn their own voice and their own style. I don't think people have that much patience to sort of wait and slowly develop their own style. What do you think people need to do in order to overcome that and sort of make things their own in some ways?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I think we're need to be fed society, just instantly stimulated, constantly needing stuff. And, you know, the big thing is I get the question all the time is I'll put an image out and you're like, oh, do you have a tutorial on that? Or can you tell me how to do that? Or what software do you use? And, you know, I said, you know, whatever happened to the day of just like looking at it and maybe trying to figure it out yourself for a little bit, you know, like not being told what to do or told how to do it step by step, because then you're just going through the process that I've gone through myself, you know, mentally, that I developed as I was working on it, you know. And sometimes when I'm working on things, like things will pop up or come into my head and I'll change direction, or I'm making all these creative decisions on the fly. Mm-hmm. People who are just doing the tutorial or following other people's styles or, you know, things, they're not making those creative decisions because they're already made for them. Right. So I think that's the, you know, that's the key, is sort of the self-motivated projects that aren't a tutorial or aren't trying to mimic something or aren't trying to recreate what somebody else recreated, because, you know, that's too easy to do creatively to just copy. Someone's already made the creative roadmap. Now you're just executing. So yeah, I hope you could execute it better because they did the creative thinking for you ahead of time. Now you're just executing better and not going through those steps. So I think you're right. And in that ability to make those creative decisions quickly and on the fly come with practice and over time, and people just want to be there right away. And it just doesn't work that way. I mean, like I said, I was in 15 years in a studio, just grinding away, doing different things, trying different things, especially back, you know, before all the tutorials blow up and stuff, you know, you kind of had to figure it out on your own. And that's, you know, I'm kind of thankful that's how I learned in my career, is during that time, because I was able to explore and find techniques. And I think you were talking to Alan McKay the other time about, you know, like the restrictions of software and hardware when stuff's hard and you have to really be diligent on how you set things up. And, you know, is it going to take 10 hours to render, or is it this file going to take an hour? Or like, what are little workarounds to just work better and faster in the creative process? And I think that slowing down pace when I first started was really helpful. But again, you need patience to do that. I completely agree. I think it's almost just a result of all the social media constant, you know, R&D, all these sphere tutorials and spheres and explosions on white and black and Houdini effects just floating all over the place. You know, it's eye candy, you know, it's intriguing and it's like, oh, I want to do that. But then, you know, in the end, what is that really getting you, or where is that putting you as an artist?
I think it's interesting because, you know, like you were just saying, you know, like there's a lot of tutorials out there and people can make those tutorials. And I've actually seen people, you know, this is back in when I was, you know, a VFX supervisor, and people hand in their reels, and it's like they would literally have a reel of tutorials that they've done.
Yeah, exactly.
Where's the artistry? That just shows that you know how to push the buttons, and that's not anything, right? So I think those are challenges. You sort of have to find a way to express yourself in some ways. However, I am going to slightly contradict myself here, because I do think it's important that, well, not important. A lot of great artists come from inspiration of other artists, of course, right? Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned, you know, you look online and you look at a lot of things. So you still find it important to go online and to check what other people are doing and see other things.
Oh, I think you should constantly consume. Like, I think you should be visually consuming all the time.
Right.
I just don't think you need to be regurgitating like all the time. So, you know, I'm consuming all the time. Like, I'm just, you know, when I take breaks, I scroll through, and I'm looking at things that like instantly grab me. Say, okay, well, why did I just stop and look at that? What about the lighting? What about the composition? Is it the subject matter? You know, all those things sort of go into an image or, you know, an animation or lighting to tell a story. So, you know, I'm always consuming, because yes, you need a visual mental catalog of things in your brain and as an artist to say, oh, you know, like I remember, you know, there was something about this image that really struck me. Like, how can I apply that to my work? Or if I'm on a project, how will it apply to this project? Or is it even necessary to apply to this project? You know, it might not be something that fits the story or the brand that you're trying to sell at the time. But those are all things that I think you need to constantly be consuming and studying art, which is different than just doing tutorials. Like, I think they're two different things. You know, the tutorial is getting educated in software and process, so that you're not getting, your creativity is not getting hung up because you don't have the ability to do it.
Right.
You know,
it could give you ideas of like, oh, I could, if I did this and I could do that, you know, and so I just need how to learn how to do this so that I can do that.
Right, exactly. Or if I'm working and I think of a concept and I'm like, oh, well, I don't know how to get that achieved, then I'll go look and say, oh, is this something, you know, that I can do in a shader, or is this a simulation, or, you know, and figure it out that way. But I just don't scroll through my tutorial sheet and say, well, today I'm going to do this tutorial and post it on my feed, you know? And it's also like where you're at in your career too, you know, that has a lot to do with it. You know, when you're starting out, you're just kind of like wading through the muck and not really sure where you're going. So that's just stuff that you do. I mean, we all did it. You know, we all started out doing tutorials, but at some point you have to get past the just learning the software and then sort of, well, what's like, what am I doing as an artist?
When you started, I mean, you were talking about the early days of Photoshop. I know exactly what you were talking about. In 92 or 93 is probably when you were talking about, right? So,
it was 91 is when it was Barney Scan, and then Photoshop one was 92. Yeah. 93. Yeah. Yep.
So though those days, I mean, it was like, there were no tutorials, right? So you had to, sit down, and Photoshop was a lot simpler. It didn't do very much.
No layers, no undos, like one undo, I should say. You got one. You got one to go back, but So it was interesting.
So the thing is that you slowly learned the software as the software got bigger. It's not like you're sitting someone into the cockpit of an F-15 and say, fly it, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, it is, but then it isn't, because there's a lot of software packages I haven't even dove into. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, I should really just like get in there and learn that. But then like, it doesn't quite apply to what I'm doing, or it doesn't have the look that I'm trying to achieve. So it's always on the back burner. So if the time comes up where I need to learn it, then I will. So I mean, there's tons of packages, and you know, I'm CG wise, I'm probably like the most limited knowledge guy you have on your podcast, because you know, my background's more in, you know, Photoshop, photography, like that stuff I can do in my sleep. CGI was more of a catch up, and then now I've kind of found my process and my workflow, and I keep wanting to like venture out, but you know, life and work, and every time I think, oh, I'm going to take some time and learn some new software, then, you know, project pops up and I can't do it. So,
Well, let's talk about how you got to there, because I'm sure there's a lot of people who, you know, maybe have a job and they're maybe doing some illustration or maybe doing this and that. But what allowed you, or what motivated you, what motivated you and what allowed you to sort of make the jump and start your own company and do that? How did you get to that point?
Yeah. No, that's a really good question, because it was something I struggled with while I was working at a studio for, you know, a few years before I left. And I just came to the realization that there were certain things made me happy as far as like my work life, like doing things, and a bunch of things I wasn't happy doing, but I did it because I could do them sort of well, or they paid bills, whatever.
Sure.
And at one point I was like, all right, why don't I just focus on the stuff that I love to do? And then that was the imaging and CGI. So while I was working, I said, okay, well, this is my plan. I'm just going to do this stuff on my own at night, like learn, try to just get better at it.
Yep.
And then when I felt that my skills were at a certain level that I could start branding myself as an artist, okay, I thought, all right, well, I'm going to start putting stuff out there with my name attached to it. Everything previous to that was attached to the studios that I worked for. You know, we'd put work out and it was the studio's work, even though I was the one who worked on it. So I made a conscious effort, like, okay, I'm going to start producing my own work. It has nothing to do with the studios I'm working with or their clients, just stuff that I like to do. And I started putting that out there.
And when was this? About what time? What around 8 years ago, 10 years ago?
See. Like, I'd say I probably started like, 2010-ish.
Okay.
Maybe 2008. I think Behance started 2007. So maybe 2008.
Okay.
Because I was like one of the first few people on that platform, because I thought it was pretty intriguing. So I just started putting stuff on there. That was kind of the first place I started to do it. And then as...
Not Flickr, like a lot of people were using Flickr.
No, like Photo Bucket or whatever those. Yeah, whatever those were. Right. Yeah, because it was more... That was geared more toward the creative industry. And what I liked about it, it was curated so that, you know... Right. The stuff that was good rose to the top and got noticed. So it was a nice motivation to create something that would, that was unique and everybody liked and would go viral and then get pushed to the top. So that's when I started sort of branding everything with my name on it. And then I started getting a couple things noticed. Then I started doing a few like PR things, you know, like Photoshop Magazine and 3D World and, you know, a bunch of other different magazines.
And how did you make that work? How did you get onto those things? Did people find you, or did you kind of find a way to reach out to 3D World? And
I just started posting stuff. Back then it was, you'd post in their galleries and then somebody might contact you from the publisher. Cause you know, like Photoshop, I think it was called Photoshop, not Photoshop World, Advanced Photoshop. That's what it was.
Okay.
Would contact me. And then like Kelby won, like they did the Photoshop Guru Award. I won that 1 year. And then that kind of got a little name recognition. And then I just started doing more and more of those, you know, PR things. So I was doing like web stuff, PR stuff. And it got to the point where I started getting enough brand recognition with my work to where I was starting to get client requests, or getting requests for them from photographers to say, hey, do you want to work together or collaborate?
Right.
And then that way we would work on projects and then we would both promote it. So then you're getting like the double exposure. You know, you're both putting the footwork.
You're working with each other. Yeah.
You're working with each other. So you're both benefiting because you have twice the net you're throwing out for the fish.
Mm-hmm.
So then that just started building. And then it got to the point where I was basically running two full-time jobs. You know, I would run a studio, come home, and then working for clients, freelancing, trying to start that business up, and to the point to where it was like becoming unhealthy, you know, like where I was like, I gotta not do this anymore.
Right.
And then made a decision, and it was scary. Like it was probably the scariest thing in my career that I've done, just to put my 2 weeks in and say, that's it. I'm in control of my own destiny. But, you know, I look back at it and like, so thankful that I did it, because it's really given me the opportunity to focus on my craft and do the projects I want to do, and to build up my client base, and being working from home now and seeing more of my kids and no commute. It's been fantastic. So,
Well, that's actually, well, There are, you know, we are now at the age where there are people of our age and generation, right? You know, I'm getting up there close to 50 at this point, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, well, can I make a jump or could I do something like that? Because maybe I want to do something that I've been, you know, I'm not me particularly, but someone like me could be, you know, saying, okay, I've worked in a visual effects studio forever. I want to do something different. I want to become this or I want to do that. And it's a really risky thing to feel. Like, it's really scary. And you have a family, you have to support that family, right? And you're doing a lot of things to work on that. And what gave you the confidence, or maybe you just say, I'm just going to take a chance, but what gave you the confidence that you said, okay, I feel that I have enough client base now that I can do this?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think it was a confidence, you know, there's a financial confidence and then there's a confidence in my work.
Yes.
And I think, you know, financial confidence, I talked to a couple other artists, some photographers, and they said, you know what, like, save, and if you can save up enough to have a year's salary saved, it'll take all the pressure off of you for that first year, to where you start getting anxiety and you're not getting work, and you know, like, it just, that all kicks in. And then they're like, you can't be creative, you can't be free, you can't be willing to do things to start the business if you're just constantly worried about, like, there's no money coming in or paychecks or you know. So that was the financial side of it. So that's why it took some time, because I just said, all right, I'm going to, you know, this is the
goal. Save. Yep.
And then the other side of it was, is, okay, is my work good enough and going to get recognized to get jobs?
Yep. And
that's where I started slowly doing the freelance and slowly doing the branding of my name. And then once I started getting, you know, frequent requests, I was like, okay, well, there's, you know, there's words getting out. I'm starting to get some contacts. I'm working with people. And then I think that was sort of the shift. I'm like, okay, so the financial, and I know I can at least have a few jobs going into, you know, something to start with. And then that's just made the jump. But going into that, I knew, okay, so once I'm into this on my own, I need to make sure I carve out time every year to do personal projects, because personal projects are what got me the work I wanted to do.
Right.
And so I make it a point that every year I carve out time to not take on paying projects, to do my own thing, or to collaborate with other artists or photographers and say, hey, we're going to work on this project together and we're going to promote it. You know, what type of work are we looking to do? Are we making a, you know, political statement? Are we targeting athletes? Are we going after a certain brand? Are we doing product shots? Or, you know, what, you know, what's the end goal? And is that something I want to work on in the end? So, you know, there's the financial side, the getting commissions, but then also the ability to just do work that you personally enjoy and do. And obviously, if you're doing that, you're going to do well at it. You know, it's like, if you do what you love, you don't work a day in your life saying, you know, so if you're putting the work out there that you like and it's good, it's going to get recognized. I mean, especially this day and age, if it's anything that's good and people notice it, it quickly gets like recognized and sent around the social media networks and, you know, it goes viral pretty quickly.
I mean, I saw one of your projects on specifically actually about social media, right? The neon signs that you did.
Which is funny, because that came about not in a tutorial, but me looking for a project and how to do like wet pavement parking lots CGI.
Right.
And then using like the environment fog. And I was just doing some tests and then put it aside. And I've always had this, concept about something about Facebook, and we used to call it facade book, you know, like as a joke, because that's really what it is.
Right.
And so it was kind of like the me working and researching a technique and me having this written down in my notebook of ideas. And those two kind of just combined one day. I'm like, oh my gosh, why don't I just make these things signs in this like dystopian empty space with these parking lots?
Right.
I'm like, it's perfect, because it's exactly what social media is, you know, it's like this empty space, but with this glowing candy-like sign. It's like, come look at me. But no one's, you know, like there's really no one around to look at. So you know, that's fun. That, so yeah, projects like that, exactly. It's where I'm trying to learn a technique, but I'm also trying to express myself as an artist, and those two just happen to combine on that one.
Well, you know, that's not too dissimilar from Pixar, right? Like Pixar does their shorts, and their shorts are always like a way for them to try out a new technique. But it also is an opportunity to do a really cool statement of some kind, right?
So right.
I think that sounds interesting to always try to find that personal growth moment, be it professionally or emotionally or just trying out new techniques, right?
Yeah, plus it's a nice outlet as an artist to just work on something that you want to work on or you enjoy or you're trying to make a statement, as opposed to constantly doing projects for other people or being told like, oh, I don't like this, let's change this, like you're the one in charge. It's kind of, you know, it's freeing and it's nice, and especially when you put it out there and you get a reaction and people react, you know, it's kind of a nice feeling, like, hey, this is what I was trying to portray, this is what I got out there, and people got it or it clicked with people. You know, it's a nice feeling as an artist to do that.
Do you feel, I mean, because I'm sure now, you know, obviously you've gone into, you know, doing your own stuff, you've gone on your own and you've gotten a bunch of work. Do you feel that doing the personal projects also helps you get new customers and get new ideas across, or?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, half the projects I do personally are to target paying clients for commission, you know, try to do something that I think people would buy. And then the other half are just personal, like, I want to do this for fun.
Right.
See if
so it's almost a marketing for yourself.
Oh, it's completely, like, that's the only marketing I do for myself are these personal projects that are targeted toward clients or the type of work that I want to do. So, you know, it's funny because I did a test. I was just running some deformers and tests and did those Beats by Dre sample. I'm sure you saw with the, like, the twisting lines and the headphones. Yeah. And literally the day I clicked, like, post that, I got a call from Specialized that says, hey, we have this shoe that we want this airflow to go through. Like, you know, what do you think? And I'm like, oh, I just put this project online. What do you think of using this technique for your shoe? And they were like, oh my God, that's perfect. That's exactly what we're looking for.
Exactly. Yeah.
Boom. And then, you know, boom. So it just kind of led into that project. So, you know, that's why I always, when I talk to younger digital artists or even kids in school, like doing portfolio reviews, I like pound into them the importance of the personal project, you know, just for learning. But it also, you know, if they're going out to get a job or they're looking to get a job in the studio, it shows people how you think. Like, you know, like you said, you get a reel and it's filled with tutorials, you know, it's tutorials. Or if I see a portfolio and it looks like all class assignments, you know, clearly you can spot a class assignment from a mile away.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't show me how you think or what you think or how you see things as an artist. You're just, you know, doing the pushing, like you said, pushing the buttons and taking the direction. So I think that's another reason why it's so important. And it's helped me in my career because agencies and clients trust that, hey, we can give him a concept and he knows how to work through it and come up with a creative solution. Like, he doesn't need to be told every step of the way what he needs to do.
Right. Yeah. So that's an important thing. And I'm sure you do that. But one of the things I remember, you know, like, I'm going back to the car commercials, we used to have some really cool, successful car commercials, and people's like, that's really cool. Can you do a car commercial for us that looks exactly like that one? You know?
Yeah.
And that's a tough decision. It's like, well, no, because, you know, Ford pay me for that. I can't do that for this guy, you know, whatever it is, you know, I can't, it's like, we have to come up with something you can derive from it, but you got to do that. So how do you, you know, because I'm sure people look at your work, it's like, I like what you did, do the same exact thing for me. So how do you deal with customers who want that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So I get that like quite a bit. And sometimes I'll say, okay, well, let's start there and let's see how we can make this slightly different. Or if that concept or that technique is good to tell your story, or if it fits your brand, then yeah, let's go ahead and do it, but let's still try to make it unique to you. Like, let's not just, you know, echo ourselves creatively.
Sure.
So, you know, yeah, I get that request a lot, and it's funny. I think it's pretty, I think it's across the industry, especially advertising marketing. I mean, I know some guys who own studios, and I'm like, man, like I can't tell the difference between your reel from this A shoe company and this B shoe company and this C right. shoe company. I'm like, they're all right. different, but the effect and stuff's the same. And they're like, I know, we like try to tell them to do something different. And they're like, no, but I want that.
Yeah.
That you've done in the past. And it's like, you can't like get it. And you're like, okay, well, I guess I, you know, like you can only push so far, you know, if you want
I know.
Work and clients, but you know, I try to tend to sway them. Like I won't say no upfront, but I'll just maybe get them in and say, okay, well, let's just try something a little different or do it in a different way.
It's very challenging because you know that when they saw your work, they probably didn't have any idea what to do when they saw your work. It's like, great, let's do that. And we'll just yeah. call that person and have him do the exact same thing.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I'd say that Life Proof project where I worked with Tim Tatter and the models are standing in the CGI.
Yeah. Yeah.
I probably get that request like once a month from somebody.
Really?
To, like, do that. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm like, it doesn't work for your brand. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
And two, like I've done it so many times, like let's move on to like something new, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's so great. It's so great. And I was like going to bring up that project because it really sort of like, there's so much about that project that feels very much about, you know, a good sample of the kind of work that you do, right? It's very sharp. It's very crisp. You've got a very, you know, cool, chromatic background, right? Mm-hmm. You've got tons of stories inside each picture.
Right? Yeah.
There's lots of stuff going on. And it was also, because I saw the making of video as well, there was also a lot of work that the photographer did the same thing. Like, okay, I want a rock here. I want this.
Oh, yeah.
And so you guys all work together to create this great image and make it all happen. And so that was a really cool project because it does tell a lot of stories. And I can imagine people like, oh, well, he's found a way to tell a ton of stories in a still, and let's just do the exact same thing. I can imagine that request.
It does. Yeah. And that just kind of goes into, it's funny you mentioned photographer Tim, like, you know, that's the great part about collaboration too. And I love doing those types of projects because him and I would pre-pro even before he shot and like, okay, what can we do CGI? What can we do in post? Yep. What do you have to shoot practically? We did a lot of back and forth in a short amount of time because this was like a time crunch thing. So we were on meetings and with the art director and so we were like, we had to cover all those details because we had no time. And like you said, there's a million things going on inside this tiny little image.
Right.
But that's what I love about collaboration, especially when you connect with other artists who are kind of like in the same thinking, same work ethic, you know, same level as you. You can really elevate each other, you know, like your work, or he'll think of something that I didn't think of, or I'll send him something after he shot and he's like, whoa, like that wasn't even on the radar.
Right.
And it's kind of exciting as artists to go back and forth and to feed off each other. And then, you know, the end result's like a great series of images.
Right. So obviously you do collaborate with some great photographers. I'm sure there's plenty that you guys work back and forth on together. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite. I mean, because I can shoot and do the CGI myself, you know, like most stuff. But for me, I just love like bringing in another photographer, a high level guy who's been doing it for years too, to just sort of so that we can surprise each other. I mean, I guess there's no other way to say it. You know, like I'll give my ideas and my thoughts and I have a vision going into the shoot. And I'm like, okay, but you know, like just do your thing. Like when you're on set and you see the angles, like, you know, it's better than me. I don't want to force you into a box
right.
and say like, no, we got to do it from this angle because my CGI scene will look this way. And then I'll get all the film back from, or not film, but the shots back from him.
Right.
And some of them, I'll just be like, whoa, that's like, I didn't even think of that as an option or a possibility. Right. And then I'll take that and I'll feed off it and then do the same thing. I'll start doing my CGI exploration, compositing, and then send it back. And then they're just like, whoa, you know, like we try to give each other those wow moments. And that's, you know, there's something about that that I like more than just, you know, working on a project myself.
Right. Yeah. Well, you mentioned earlier, it's like, you know, your first foray into CG was on a Mac. I remember it was Strata Studio Pro and Form Z, and I think there was Infinity was another one that was around.
Yeah. And then there was all the little like niche ones like Bryce and Poser and
absolutely. Yeah, I actually, one of the first things that my wife did when she got into CG was to do a big Bryce animation for a planetarium, believe it or not.
Okay. Well, it's funny because that's back in the 90s, I had Poser and used to do that. And I actually did the cover art for two or three of the boxes for that.
Oh, for Poser?
For Poser, yeah.
Wow.
yeah. So that was kind of like my, I don't know, that was just almost like a hobby. Like I would just do it to take a break from cars. You know, I'd be like, I'd rather work on some people.
People, yes. yeah.
You know, it was just like totally the opposite shift. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's funny. And then I just kind of dropped away for a few years doing CGI and then jumped back in.
Right. Well, let's talk about that CG stuff. I mean, like how, you know, you obviously you're playing around with it on a Mac, you're doing some stuff with the Poser stuff, but what sort of really got you more into it? How did that sort of happen?
So, when we were in the automotive industry, we were trying to figure out a way to like real time render cars and to make
still
decisions.
Trying to figure that out.
yeah, to make decisions. I mean, this was like 99, 2000.
Yeah.
So we were using some different softwares, and I was like, well, you know, I just really, you know, the whole like render and pray change days where you had to just constantly keep doing renders.
Right.
Well, that's when I came across Modo, and it had the first like interactive preview window.
Right.
And I was like, wow, that's pretty amazing that I can just like sort of see what I'm working on, lighting, and get pretty quick previews.
Yeah.
And
this was not like, F prime though, right? This was before F prime.
Yes.
Yeah. okay.
Yeah. So I was like, wow, this has some possibilities. So it was more for creative reasons than it was like, oh, I'm going to get into the technical CGI because that's where it's headed. I was just like, oh, like I like what I can do in CGI, but I just don't like the process at the time. Like the,
got it.
You know, it's all numbers and moving lights and settings and materials. And then you click and you hope you did it right. And you're like, oh, that's not even close to what I was thinking.
Yeah.
So that's what shifted me from kind of just playing it as a hobby to like, wow, this can really affect my work or like help me explore new things that I couldn't have explored, or I could have, but it would just taken me 10 times as long to do. So that's what kind of got me into it. Was that, yeah, it was just that, like that previewing and being able to sort of get feedback and see things as I was working at them and make creative decisions without waiting for stuff.
Okay.
And that's just, I just kind of progressed from there.
And Modo seemed to be like something that you gravitated towards, right? At that point.
Yeah, and it's because it was, you know, we were doing some Alias stuff. Like Autodesk had like a program called Showcase, which had real time like CAD visualization.
Okay.
We had some Maya, and I like knew my way around it, but I just didn't feel I never felt comfortable in it. And for some reason, Modo was more like a Photoshop based feel to it and the layers. Okay. And I was like, oh, it's intuitive to me. Like I wasn't a node based person. I was a layer based person.
Got it.
So it just felt natural to me. And I picked it up super quick. I mean, like from never opening it to, you know, within a month, like creating projects in it, like fairly easy. So that's why I just gravitated to it. It just, you know, the UI and at that time, I don't even think like Cinema 4D even was out yet, or if it was, it was in its infancy. Cause that's when, you know, it was like Lightwave / Modo.
Yep.
So like when that whole thing happened, that's kind of when I jumped in.
Huh? Yeah. Well, that's cool. I mean, Modo is, I know there's a lot of hardcore Modo people out there and they really love it. Obviously, you know, modeling tools in Modo are.
Yeah. I was going to say the modeling. Yeah. Like my modelers, like the guys I use just love Modo. I mean, they can fly in it and there's just tons of, just intuitive tools and how it works. Yeah. Guys just love how easy it is and it plays well with everybody. Like you can
sure
import export just about anything in it. So,
Yeah. And just exactly like you said, I know still a lot of people who are, you know, who are doing basically, you know, some of the old Lightwave guys who are, you know, sort of left Lightwave, but they stick with Moto for the modeling and then bring it into whatever 3D package they do for other stuff. But you were, I mean, I remember one of the things, you know, you were one of the, when we made V-Ray for Moto, you were one of the first really big hardcore adopters of that program and made that work. I mean, what was that like? I mean, what got you motivated to try to use V-Ray in that area?
I just love the look of the GI and just the feel of the renderer. You know, it's like every render has its own kind of look to it.
Of course.
And for me, it was just that extra little level of realism that I could play with and had control of that the Moto native renderer at the time didn't.
Right.
So that's what kind of made me jump into it. And then as I got deeper into it, I mean, just the more I, you know, like the flexibility and the ability of the ray tracer and the GI and then moving on to Moto Next and the hybrid rendering and all that stuff. So it's been keeping up. So it's not one that I've had to abandon because it's been keeping up with technology and it sort of fits my style. You know, and it's funny, I just saw a post on Instagram from Ash Thorpe, who just posted a render a few days ago that was like, oh, I'm just getting into Studio Max with V-Ray, never used it before, but I think I'm using it from now on. He's like, I just love the GI in it. It just has the right feel. And I was like, whew, like somebody else, like I'm glad someone else gets it. Thanks, Ash.
Yeah.
You know, it was nice to hear because it was almost the validation, you know, like, because I've gotten questions like, oh, well, why do you use it? And I'm like, it fits my workflow and I just like the look of it, you know?
Well, listen, I'm not necessarily, I work for Chaos Group, but I also know that everyone has their own style and their own look and there's certain things that you're gonna do. And, you know, there's some great artists out there I know who use Arnold exclusively, and there's like that's a look they can get with Arnold, right? And that's so I'm not necessarily going to argue that at any point, but I just think it's interesting that like you've got a really cool niche in terms of the work and the quality of the stuff you do. Like I said, you have a style that's your own, and that shows. And there's like now that's a kind of interesting thing because it's a combination of Moto and a combination of V-Ray, and I think. Not to say that people need to pick those up, but I'm saying that tool set fits your way of working. That seems to be pretty cool.
And that's by design too, because you know, it's what I'm looking to achieve in my images because, you know, I've dabbled in other renderers and other things or I can see what everyone else is doing. And I'm like, that's not me. I mean, it's cool, looks great, but that's not my work. So, you know, and cause I get clients when they want to try to have me collaborate or other studios and they're like, oh, I want to do handoffs and stuff. And they're like, well, what are you working? And I'm like, well, this is what I work in. If you want the image to look like my work, like this is my process and this is what I use. So, you know, if you want me to hand it off to someone that's, you know, they're going to have to recreate it on their own because I'm not, you know, it doesn't work, you know, I don't work that way. So.
Has anyone actually tried to take, I mean, obviously I'm sure that a lot of people approaching you because they love your style or love what you do. Has anyone ever tried to approach you and say, we like to do what you're doing, but we want an animated version of it or we want an animation of it?
All the time.
I can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, almost on every project and, you know, which gets me into the like I need to learn video effects animation, but my brain just doesn't work that way. So I will reach out to, some studios. I mean, I know guys who are like in video production and video effects and can do it. And, you know, if I do the still, it basically, that's the style frame that the client will take and we'll have the animation handle it from there.
Oh, so you become like a concept artist at that point.
Yeah. So at that point I do the finish still and then I can hand off assets, you know, models and stuff so that at least that's the same. I mean, they're not going to get my full scene file because it's not compatible with their pipeline anyway.
Right.
And they'll just use that as like, okay, well, here's the starting frame. Let's match it, but in motion. So that does happen and it's happening more and more, you know,
oh, really?
So And like I said, I'm not going to do it myself. I don't plan on, it's not a thing I'm, I want to do. But I will work with like studios and do a handoff, and that seems to work pretty well too.
So you picked up some of the, what came first, photography or CGI to you?
Photoshop, CGI came first.
Okay.
And then while I was working in the studio, I was just around photography all day long.
Right.
And just kind of picked it up and then started getting some equipment and, you know, practicing on my own, shooting at home. I have my own home studio, you know, lights and everything. And,
yep.
And actually I dove deeper into photography to help my CGI.
That's what I was about to ask. It's like, how did you use one to learn from the other? Like, what was the connection there?
So I said, okay, I'm going to get in the studio and start shooting practically using my lights and modifiers. And then I would get in the CGI and I say, okay, well, what's the equivalent of this modifier I'm using compared to when I'm using CGI? Right. What's the limitations of one? What's the advantage of one? Mm-hmm. And how can I match them up to look similar? Like they're in one shot. And that's what sort of taught me the compositing and blending the two things, is making sure that I'm consistent with those lightings between the two. And then if I'm working with a photographer, I can portray that or say, hey, what was your light setup? And I can mimic that, you know, CGI.
You develop your language that way.
Right. So easier. I can say, oh, what did you use? You know, was it strobe? Was it a square, you know, soft box? Was it a beauty dish? You know, whatever. Right. And then I can translate that to when I'm doing CGI.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. Do you get actually when a photographer, do you try to have them do a reference frame of the lighting for you so that you can see what they lit it with or how it was positioned?
No, I mean, I can generally look at a photo and tell which modifiers and stuff are being used on it now. Like I've gotten to the point where I can say, oh, they used, you know, a soft fill and a negative fill and a beauty dish or a soft box or whatever. But I will still, you know, ask them, you know, maybe some camera settings if I don't get the data from the actual shot.
Right.
You know, like,
because you might get the metadata, right?
Yeah. Like, you know, you'll get the EXIF file.
Right.
So at least I can, you know, but even camera backs, you know, because they'll be shooting on one camera back and then the client wants this huge square piece of art. So then the camera backs don't match. So it gives you a general idea of setup.
Gotcha. But
then I'll just ask them, you know, generally like what they use, or if I know the photographer really well, like Tim, like I kind of just know how he shoots anyway. So it's like, you know, it just kind of goes unspoken. I know it. I just look at his photos and I can tell, you know, sort of the setup.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So, you know, you've done obviously a ton of really, really cool work. What was some of your, you know, you mentioned the life,
Life Proof.
Yeah. Life Proof. Which is a phone case, right?
Case. Yeah. And they got bought by OtterBox. So it's
they got bought by OtterBox, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So they're all like, it's all the same OtterBox now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically like a very ruggedized case for your phone to do crazy stuff.
You can throw it and it doesn't do anything. Yeah.
Yeah. And those are great. I really love that concept. And it was a great advertising campaign. Super cool. And I you know, there's certain advertising campaigns that I look at and I'm like, I love that because it tells a story. I talk about this all the time. There was one I remember, I was sitting on a subway in New York and it was a Guinness commercial. And it was just a half drunken Guinness, and it had all the little rings of foam, you know, from the Guinness to get on there. And it said, every ring tells a story. And it was like, you know, kind of like a tree rings, but it was about the, you know, going to the bar. I was like, what a brilliant commercial. You know, it just says a billion things. And there's certain, like, I felt the same way when I saw that Lifebox commercial, because I was like, there's a lot of stuff going on in here.
Yeah.
But what were some of the other cool projects that you did?
Man, I mean, there's so many different projects. I mean, I'd say like probably my favorites are personal projects. So the Motion and Air, that was probably, it's with the dancers and the swirls. That's probably like the image that sort of, or the series of images that sort of said, okay, I'm here. Like my career starting, like that's, that was kind of the turning point. So that always has kind of a soft spot in my heart as far as projects go.
Right.
And then the other one was, like you mentioned, the social media one.
Right.
That one I just love because it was one of those things that I just like just let it spew out like what I was thinking. I was like, sure. All right, I'm just going to like say things how I think. And that blew up. Like everyone connected with it, and people who could read the fine print, like that's where all the kind of the inside jokes were on the bottom, the signs. And people even picked up on like the Behance copy was Comic Sans, which is like, you know, the designers yep. like, no. So, you know, all those things, like people like just really enjoyed that series. So that mm-hmm. that's another series that I enjoyed making. Like commission work. Yeah, it's hard. Life Proof's always up there for sure. There's some that are just kind of obscure that like didn't get as much recognition, but I still love. There was like an iFly one I did with Tim where it's the wind tunnel indoor flyers.
Oh, yeah.
I just, something about that I always just loved. And then a couple collaborations I've done with Tim, like the Future of Sports way back in the day where we did that kind of Tron-esque sports fields with the like mm-hmm. neon glowing at night shots.
That's cool. Yeah,
that one was pretty cool. That was one of the first personal collaboration projects I'd worked on ever, you know, mm. with another artist, was that project. And that was probably about 10 years ago now, almost.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That was around the time Tron came out.
Yeah.
I'd worked on Tron. I did a light bike sequence. On
oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's funny cause we came up with the concept, and at first we were thinking, okay, let's make objects that illuminate mm-hmm. like on their own, but like sports related. We're like, okay, so it's like sports. And the whole time we're like, okay, this can't be Tron. Like it can't look like Tron,
yeah.
you know? So we kept steering to that. And then of course, like as soon as we put it out there, people were like, oh yeah, look like Tron. We're like, no, that's not what we weren't going for that.
Well, right. Yeah. 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 But I do know that like self illuminated things are hard because they're self illuminated and therefore they get flat really quickly. So it's mm-hmm. hard to make something self-illuminated and still have shape at the same time.
Yeah.
That's a challenge. So.
Yeah. That for sure. We came across that. Yeah. You have to play with like how like strong that lighting is and like,
right.
Yeah, make sure that
put a reflection on top and then is like, then you're covering the self-illumination and it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's real tricky. Tough. Yeah. Real tough. Yeah. But yeah, your work is really cool, man. I really love love what you do, and I think that it's really great to sort of hear that story because I think especially nowadays, you know, when people are working from home, they need to think about like I'd love them to listen to this podcast and say, you know what, I need to do a couple things on my own to really separate myself from the crowd or separate myself, and I think that's something absolutely. That I should be doing.
I mean, like I said, I will pound in the personal project and not personal tutorial projects, but personal, like, this is how I see things. This is right. what I'm about. This is how I think. And then put it out there.
But you also did it when you did it as a marketing of yourself, too. You think about
right,
it as that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You've got to have some. I mean, there's got to be some target or some, you know. Unless it's just for fine art, which is fine too. I know a ton of guys are just doing sure. it for fine art and that's all they do it for. And who knows with all the crypto art stuff going on now, who knows? Like, I don't know. That could be a thing.
Right. But yeah, I think it's really, cool that you're doing that. I mean, what are some, you know, obviously people are working from home for a while and that's nothing new to you. You've been working from home long before this pandemic.
Yeah. It's just business as usual. Now I just have kids home that aren't in school. That's the only problem.
Yeah, I know. That's been a little tough for us, but it's actually been good. Our kids are, you know, we all have our own little desks and our own computers. Yeah. So thank God I have a solid internet at home, so I'm okay there. But
for sure.
But what are some of the, you know, what are some of the advice that you can give people like working from home and like trying to keep focused on your job and on keeping things working?
You know, for me, I just kind of, I'm a little more free flowing. I don't like to schedule my day and like, I got to fit everything into this. I'll work like when I feel the motivation or I'm obviously if there's deadlines and stuff, but you know, if I'm just like find myself, I'm just like scrolling or I'm just consuming things and I'm not really being productive. I mean, mm-hmm. I'll take a break and go away. Like I'll, you know, like now that the kids are home, like go do something with the kids or, you know, just go for a walk, or, you know, during the summer, which is sad, summer's over, but, you know, we would just, all of us would just take a break and go to the lake or go to the beach or, you know, do something during the day. Cause I'm like, I can always come back at night and get stuff done. So I would always make sure I just take breaks, just like mentally and creatively.
Right.
And then keep in mind, like, well, there's no commute now, so you have that extra time. So, like, allow yourself to have that extra time. I mean, I, you know, early in my career, I used to work like crazy hours, like all-nighters stuff. Right. And, you know, like I said, when I was trying to do both, and I'm like, it's just, it's unhealthy. Like, I just, you just can't keep that up for a long period of time. So I've learned to say no to a lot of things, to give myself breaks, like, not stress myself out, because like it does, it takes a toll on you, like mentally, physically, like if you're just trying to like burn it at both ends for, you know, it's that crunch time, like nobody likes it.
Right.
And I don't like it being promoted as a positive thing in the industry. You know, I think people need to have some balance. Like you got to put the work in and work hard, but you also need to like take a break and let your body and mind sort of heal in between too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember my friend Victor, who's in São Paulo, Victor Hugo, he basically was telling some things like, it's great to be your own boss. It's like, it's terrible to be your own boss, because like when you're not working, you can do whatever you want, because, you know, it's like, I'm not working because I decided to take a break. And it's like, but now I'm not working. And oh my God, all the work's piling up. You know?
Yeah.
So you have to, you still have to kind of manage your off time and on time at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even when we take vacations, you know, I still like make sure I set aside, you know, half hour, hour in the morning on vacation to just go through emails, correspondence, like whatever, because I can't, you know, as you own your own business, you can't ignore that.
Right.
But like I said, that's also where I can say no. Like I know in advance, like I'm taking these 2 weeks off to go spend time with the family. Like, I'm not taking projects on, like, and I'll be upfront with my clients and say, no, I'm out, but I'm back on this day if you want. If the timeline can wait, otherwise, like, you know, feel free to find another artist. Like, I'm okay with that.
Right.
But, you know, I don't try to hide it. I'm pretty upfront with clients about, like, hey, we're just, like, I'm either booked or I'm taking time off. So
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's cool, man. That's really cool. Listen, I this has been a great conversation. I've really been able to learn a lot from you, and obviously your work is really cool. People should definitely check it out. What is the best place for people to check out your work?
MikeCompo.com, and then my Instagram is @MikeCompo, and then obviously on Behance.
On Behance as well,
That's where I feel like most people follow me, is Behance, and then everything else is kind of secondary. But so Behance is just /MikeCompo as well.
Right. Perfect. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks.